You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
Like Sherry said, my name is Carrie Walker, and I'm going to be talking about keeping your cool and setting the tone of your family. Here's my family. My husband and I, Luke, have three kids. Jude's 10. Titus is 8. Maggie's 4.5. This is, our most recent spring break trip to Miami. This is my family. And I, while I'm not a parenting specialist or, I haven't written any books, I do have a little bit of experience. Here's what you really want to see, right? The fury of 1,000 men of, my child screaming at his little brother. And, I do want to draw your attention not to the child in front, but the child in back slinking out of his dad's lap and screaming. So I live in a home of spirited people, and we have a dog. You don't want to, forget about the pets. We also have a bearded dragon. You got to include the pets because when things are exploding in your house, somebody's puking, you're mad at your husband, your kid's screaming at you, that's when the dog brings the dead groundhog in your house or, is puking in the corner, right? It's like, I can't take any more. But that's when the pets, the bearded dragon goes missing. This is a typical morning for me. And like many of you, we all probably live in chaos and we have experience in trying to keep our cool and set the tone of our family. So I thought it would be important to kind of explain what I mean by keeping our cool and setting the tone. So obviously it is trying not to scream in your kid's face. Right? That's the goal. When things heat up, when things are going crazy, we don't want to scream at our kids, but it's more than that. And I do think it's important to qualify that there are a handful of us that don't feel tempted to scream at our kids, that the emotional reaction instead of exploding is disengaging. And so, what we are talking about today is not reacting emotionally to our children, that we want to stay calm, but also set the tone. A big part of parenting is that we are laying down boundaries for our children, boundaries that are set on a set of values. They're based off of a set of values. And we want to maintain those. We want to be this stable, consistent leader for our children. An example of a boundary would be, we don't hit one another, right? Because in this family, we value learning self-control and not expressing our anger and violence. Another one might be, we value your self-esteem, and so because of that, we've decided to limit your access to social media. And that's a boundary that we've laid, and it's a value of our family, and this is not something that we are going to change just because you're upset or you wish you had a different mother. We want to set the tone of our family and parent out of values. And so just a little bit about why I chose this. I think you might argue this is universally appealing, right? This is the hard part of parenting, that we want to be consistent, we want to not explode. But also, I recently had this unique opportunity with my brothers that we started doing this thing where we're interviewing our parents. We're actually still doing that. It's unusual, but what we are doing is we have hundreds of questions and we're recording this and we're asking them questions starting in their early childhood, going all throughout their lives. So what was your relationship with your parents like? What was your relationship with your siblings like? What did you love about your childhood? Early marriage, that sort of thing. It's been very cool. I highly recommend it. But one of the things I've been most struck by is hearing my parents summarize their childhoods. We've all heard this before, right? Where somebody says, my childhood was characterized by chaos. I had this alcoholic father, and it really set the tone of my whole childhood. Or we had a special needs sibling, and all of my parents' energy went towards this special needs sibling. The thing I loved about my childhood was the summers I spent with my grandparents and the freedom that we had and how loving they were. That's the thing I really value. And it dawned on me as I was hearing them, you know, summarize these things, that one day my kids are going to answer this question, that they're going to be on a date or having coffee with someone, and someone's going to say, you know, what were your parents like? What did they value? What was your childhood like? And I found that highly motivating, because as a parent, you know, oftentimes it feels like, what even matters? You know what I mean? Everybody's doing things differently. I'm reading all these parenting books. We can't control the kind of adults our children grow up to be. We can't control the choices that they make, but we can control the culture that they're raised in. We have control over the tone of the family and their childhood. And I think that that's really motivating, that you know, if we are these stable, intentional leaders, that we can really have a major influence on our children. And you know, after hearing my parents talk about these were the favorite things about our childhood, if I told that to any one of my parents' friends, they would be like, that makes perfect sense. Those things shaped who they are today. So the other part of this too is, as I started looking at all the parenting passages that are the passages in the Bible that are specific to parenting, there was a consistency here that while we don't get very specific advice like what potty training method to use or how do we raise a financially responsible child, we get kind of a big picture that parents are called to be consistent, that we're supposed to discipline consistently and be intentional leaders. And I wanted to be sure to mention that the Bible agrees with what we see in psychology and childhood development, that one of the most important things children need to be a successful adult is to be raised in a loving home, and that they that raising a kid in a loving and gracious home is one of the most important things we can do. And I wanted to say that because we're not going to be talking about that a whole lot today, but I hope that that's assumed, that we're talking about disciplining under, you know, and including a relationship that is characterized by love. I think, too, this is our reason why we even look to the Bible for parenting advice, because of this profound message of grace, that God agrees with what we see in psychology, that what we deeply desire is love, and that he offers that to us for free through the death of Jesus. And I think that, you know, this message of grace is why I even look to the Bible for advice, because it is so profound and so clear that this is what we need, that we need forgiveness and, you know, the freedom that grace really offers us. So, like I said, the other thing that's very clear when you pull out all the passages on that are specific to parenting, there's a very clear, consistent message that part of parenting is being a consistent disciplinarian. And just to be clear, in the Bible, the word for discipline includes both negative reinforcement, you know, consequences, timeouts, etc., but also positive reinforcement. It's a word that is more like training. So both in the New Testament and the Old, Ephesians 6, 4, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Proverbs 13, 24, he who withholds his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him diligently. Proverbs 29, 17, correct your son, he will give you comfort. He will also delight your soul. And on it goes. Proverbs 23, Proverbs 19, Proverbs 22. I think this should be a big encouragement to many of us when we feel like all I'm doing is disciplining, right? It seems like that's part of the job, that, you know, we are called to do this. We got to stay the course. This is a big part of the job, and this is what our children need, is consistent discipline. The other real clear theme in the Bible is this call to intentional leadership. There's a bit of a overlap between these two topics, but Proverbs 22:6, train a child up in the way he should go. Even when he's old, he will not depart from it. Colossians 3, fathers, don't exasperate your children so that they will not lose heart. There's supposed to be some calculated moves on our end, that we are not emotionally reacting just to anything our children do, but that we are tempering our discipline, that we're not, you know, making our children lose hope. Joshua 4, Deuteronomy 6, There's all these cases in the Old Testament where God tells his people, be intentional about what you tell your children. He tells them, you know, build these monuments where significant things have happened so that you remember that when you pass them with your kids, you tell them, you know, this is what God did here. Deuteronomy 11, 19 through 20 says, you shall teach them to your sons, talking of them when you sit in your house, when you walk along the road, when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. And this is clearly, you know, this is how we show our children what we value, right? Is that we are intentional. This is what we are choosing to talk about at the dinner table. This is the stories that we're telling you. It's the things that we value that we want to impart into you. So that's going to be our focus this morning, keeping the cool and setting the tone. And another way to think of this is being a stable, intentional leader for our children. I remember having my first kid, I kind of thought of myself as kind of a tough person, you know, in general. And I just remember thinking, I can't believe everybody does this. Everybody has a kid. It is so hard. It's so hard for so many reasons, and the more kids you add, the harder it gets. I think one thing, too, that's important for us to acknowledge is the cultural pressures, right? That, you know, take, for example, the social media thing, or, you know, I want to limit my kids' screen time, and I've decided I'm not going to let them have a tablet. And you're at the doctor's office, and they're like, everybody else has this. Why are you so mean? Why do you always have to, you know, withhold these things when the rest of all my friends have this thing you're withholding from me? And again, we might feel like, ugh, am I doing the right thing? I don't know. Good. Okay, so before we get into this, I just wanted to reference two books that I think are good on this topic. Boundaries with Kids by Henry Cloud, Dr. Henry Cloud, and Dr. John Townsend. And then Scream Free Parenting. This is the book I'm going to reference the most. It's by this guy named Hal Runkle. Not the best name, but it's actually a really good book. And I will say I've never read a parenting book where I agree with 100% of the things they say. There's always a weird chapter or two. But this is it's a good book. There's definitely some things that I'm like, I don't know. So I'm going to reference this the most. All right. Before we get into the practicals of how we do this, I think it's almost as valuable to acknowledge and kind of keep in the forefront of our mind why this is so important. We're going to look at three things here. And the first reason this is so important is that our children desperately need us to be in control. This is from Boundaries with Kids. They say an accurate description of children is that they are little people who are out of control themselves and attempting to control everyone around them. And, you know, we all know this is true. We've heard this explanation, right? That from day one, when they are dropping the food out of their high chair, to when they're in middle school trying to navigate romantic relationships and social expectations and rules at home, our children are trying to figure out a very complicated world. They're also trying to figure out themselves. You know, we think, what are you thinking? Why are you doing this? They don't know. You know, they are trying to figure out the world and they are overwhelmed. And so, to some extent, as parents, we should expect our children to be a hot mess when they are at home. That when they are screaming at us, when they are losing their mind, they don't know what they want. They are confused. And it is our job as parents to be a sense of calm and stability to them. You know, one thing that my friends and I have been laughing about, that as we've aged, many of us have gotten a fear of flying. And it's so stupid, and I hate it, and I used to love flying, but now when we fly, I've got all this anxiety, and I'm like, God, logically it doesn't make a ton of sense. And we've laughed about how old we are and how dumb it is, and we laugh about how scared we are when we're on planes. And I've thought about this a lot because I'm like, God, I got to overcome this. Why can't I stop worrying? And I've realized, you know, I think that my fear of flying is multifaceted, but I think a big part of it is I know nothing about aviation. I don't know how that plane's staying in the air. I don't know what turbulence really is or how dangerous it is. I don't really know how much control the pilot has over the plane. Is a computer flying it? Is he flying it? I don't know. All I know is when I start getting jostled violently by that turbulence, I'm terrified. But what is the universal move when you're scared on a plane? You look to that flight attendant, right? Everybody knows that. You are terrified. You don't know what's going on. But when she's smiling and passing out her peanuts and pretzels, you know we're good. Everything's safe. And in the same way, this is our role for our children. They don't know what's going on. They're screaming at us. What we need to do is to smile, pass out those peanuts and pretzels. I'm sorry you want to kick me right now, but you have to go to your room. You know, like, our job is to be that sense of calm. And although it may not seem like that's what they want from us, that's what we need to give them. And so I think that just remembering that can be such a helpful tool in withstanding their wrath, you know, that we can be here all day, and what I'm going to do is stay calm, and you can keep your screaming up, but it's not going to change the way things are. Okay, here's what Runkle says about this. He says, when we scream at our kids, when we get emotionally reactive, we communicate one single message, calm me down. No matter what words are coming out of our mouths, no matter how long our tirade is, no matter how old our children are, when we scream, the message is always the same, calm me down. Whenever we react to our children's behavior by screaming, we're actually begging them to help us calm our anxiety. We're saying that we just cannot handle the fact that they will not obey or listen or calm down. We cannot handle this, so we flip out. I can't believe you did this. What in the world were you thinking? Look at me when I talk to you. Insert whatever words you want. The message is always the same. I need you to comply or else I'm going to lose it. You know, I think that's really good. One thing we didn't talk about is the anxiety involved in parenting. Who among us have not seen our child do something completely insane and we've thought, well, I guess you're a murderer. You're going to be a murderer. You know, like what is happening here? Is this normal behavior? I remember one time my kids were in a conflict and, you know, they're always fighting. And I hear something and they're screaming and one of them in some psychopathic act of aggression peed on the floor. And I'm like, what does that mean for your future? You know what I mean? And we've all been there. Maybe your kid hasn't aggressively peed, but they've done something where you've been like, I don't know if this is normal. And we feel like this behavior needs to stop right now, right? And that we're anxious, we're worried. Is this kid going to have friends in school? Are they ever going to be able to succeed? You know, are they chronically ill? There's so many things to worry about. And when we put that back on our children, it makes things worse. It's going to increase the amount of tension between us and them. Okay, so our children need us to be in control. The second reason why this is important is because this is going to result in us raising adults and not children. And that's what we want, right? We want grown-ups who act like adults, not children. And so as we hold these boundaries firm and as we keep our cool, we're going to instill all these values and tools in our children that they need to be functional adults. They're going to have a sense of responsibility. That I was raised in a home where my choices actually matter, that there's consequences to my actions. They're going to have a real sense of security when they're raised in a home that they have a parent who is under control and who is consistent. They're going to acquire a sense of respect not just for authority, but also for themselves. And then they are slowly, very slowly, going to learn how to regulate their emotions, and they're going to see what it looks like to know an adult who can regulate their emotions. And unfortunately, we all know adults who don't have these tools, right? And they aren't functional. They're not a functional adult, that they can't hold careers, they can't hold healthy relationships. And so this is another reason why it's important. And then lastly is that we will experience the true joys of parenting. And this is the great paradox, right? That our kids can simultaneously drive us completely insane. And, you know, we feel many of us have wished for just a light hospital stay, right? We just need a break from our children. Maybe a non-life-threatening appendicitis. But at the same time, we love them. It's like the greatest joy of our life to have kids. And by keeping our calm, setting the tone, we're going to experience the true joy. One thing that Runkle points out in his book is that as we show them that we are this consistent, responsible person, as they make more and more mistakes as they get older, you know, mistakes that have weightier consequences, that they're more likely to turn to us and know, you know, I respect my mom and we have a good relationship, and I'm going to come to her with this big mistake I made. And that's what we want, right? We want this healthy relationship. So let's move on to the practicals here. How do we keep our cool? We're going to stick with our airline theme. Put on your oxygen mask first. That's our first practical. And this is straight from Runkle's book, Scream Free Parenting. He makes the point that airlines always include this in their safety talk, you know, when you're on the airplane, because of parents and adults' natural inclination to take care of children first. And so, you know, they remind us of this because in the case that we're in an environment that's lacking oxygen and we try to help someone first, we won't be thinking clearly in order to help them best. And in the same way, I think as parents, we can do the same thing where there is this natural inclination to help our kids to be maybe over-involved and not be taking care of ourselves. And he has a real good critique on our culture's kind of overemphasis on self-care. However, he says it's still extremely important for us to be taking care of ourselves physically, spiritually, and emotionally. And many of us talked about, you know, how hard it is to be patient and to keep our cool with our kids when we're sick, when we're feeling crappy, when we haven't had a good night's sleep. I know for me, I am like a baby when it comes to sleep. If I'm not getting enough sleep, my fuse is way shorter. And so for me, I've had to prioritize sleep. That's just something that I need to be the best parent that I can be right now. I wish we had more time for this. I really want to focus on the other two. But this is something to think about. You know, are we eating correctly? Are we getting enough sleep? Are we exercising? Are we taking care of ourselves spiritually? You know, I think coming to meetings like this, spending time with God, we have an advantage that the secular world does not have, that we can make this choice to kind of bolster ourselves in a way. And we have this kind of added tool to parent our children well. And I think a lot, lastly, is emotionally. We need to know ourselves and what our limits are, what fills us up. Maybe you're a people person. You need to get friend time. I know, you know, I am more of an introvert. That's not something that I need. However, one thing I have found with having young kids is really the benefit of having kind of a community that you're doing this alongside. Because while I don't get filled up by people, I do get filled up by watching other people's kids behave badly. Right? There is something about, you know, you can be stuck in your house and be like, this is so crazy, I can't take any more. And you go to the neighbor's house and it's like, whoa. You know, there's something relieving about we're all in the same boat, right? That I remember watching one of Stephanie's kids walk out of school one day and get the wrong flavor sucker and they just collapsed and like then screamed at their sibling for no reason. And I was just like, yes. I love seeing that, not in a judgmental way at all, but it's relieving to know, you know, things are not falling apart. We need to get quiet time to ourselves. You know, in our house, quiet time is still a thing. My oldest kid is 10, and they are like, this is crazy, I'm not tired. And I'm like, I am, and I need quiet time. So what we're doing is both we're being able to parent our kids better, and also we're showing them the world doesn't revolve around you. And Runkle talks about that a lot in his book, that the amount of pressure kids feel when they sense that everything's about them makes everything harder. It makes the chaos in the family a lot worse. But when they know, you know, my mom has her own life and I don't control everything in this household, it relieves a lot of pressure, even though they might not, you know, say that, right? They're going to say, why do you never spend time with me? But what they really want and what they need is to see, what does a healthy adult look like? Okay. So that's our first practical. Put on your oxygen mask first. Our second one is know your destination. So this is talking about parenting with the end in mind, taking kind of a big picture. Okay, so that's the trailer from King Richard. Hopefully people have seen that. It's a real good movie. It's a story, it's based on the true story of the, mostly of the father of Venus and Serena Williams, the tennis stars. And I play this not because, you know, I think the end goal is that we're producing world-class athletes, right? Or even that you could if you tried. Or even that he is the ideal parent. I don't believe that. But what I do believe is when you watch this movie, he is the perfect example of setting the tone in your family because he was so focused on his end goals. And so if you sat those two girls down, Serena and Venus, and asked them, you know, what did your parent value? What did your dad care about? They would have the exact same answers, and it would be real quick, right? It was very clear what he valued, and he shaped everything he did in order to keep them off the streets and to turn them into these tennis stars. He valued them being resilient in the face of adversity, and he valued them being hard workers. And I think that this is just an awesome example of that. And it what this allows us to do is to have a resiliency when it comes to the wrath of our children. And so when they, you know, punch us in the mom guilt and they're like, you only care about this other kid, or you only care about work, or you, you know, are always saying no to me, then we, you know, that kind of stuff will roll off our back because we have this end goal and we know what I'm doing is what I think is best for you. And Runkle advocates for this as well. He says, visualize the kind of adult that you want each of your children to become and the type of relationship you would like to enjoy with each of them. Picture your youngest child at the age of 25. What year is it? How old does that make each of your other children? How old does that make you? After you've done the math, allow yourself to get really imaginative. And he goes on and on. I didn't want to include the whole verse or the whole quote, but he goes on and on. You know, what kind of career do they have? Did they go to college? Do they have a master's degree? How much money do they make? What are their spiritual beliefs? What is the content of their character? What do their friends say about them? He advocates that as parents, we need to think in detail. What are the things I want for my children? What do I think is a successful adult? What are the most important things? And what this allows us to do is to kind of filter out, you know, all of the other stuff. There are a million things to fight with our kids about, right? Put your shoes on. We're going to be late. Brush your hair. Brush your teeth. Why won't you eat this? All day long, right? But as we sort out our values, we can really emphasize the things we want to emphasize and overlook the things that we don't care that much about. And so this also helps us to identify what is it that our family is about, right? We're not just doing things because this is how my parents did things, or doing things because I don't want to do the things my parents did. We're doing things because we have decided that the Walker family is about this. And that's what we're going to talk about at dinner. You know, just like those Old Testament verses, those are the things we're going to bring up regularly and we're going to praise our kids for. These are the things I'm going to hold my ground on. And so as you look to the future and you think about your adult child and you think, you know, one of the main things I want for my kids is for them to be a well-dressed adult, right? Then what that means is that I need to dress to impress every single day. I need to be, you know, a model of this. Also, when they come down the stairs to go to school and they look like a lunatic, then I'm going to dig my heels in and say, no way. The Walkers are good. They are well-dressed people, and you need to go change. Now, if that's not our end goal, right, and they come down the stairs and they look like a homeless person, you say, have a great day, my dear. You look crazy, and I love you. Have a great day, right? So this helps us sort out what are we going to fight with them about, right? The content of their character. We are going to sit down and have a very intense conversation if we have a problem with lying, right? If we want an honest and a functional adult that has a clear conscience, we're really going to try and instill in them why we care about being truth tellers. I know a child who excessively cuts their own hair, and it drives their mother crazy. But, you know, is this the hill that she's going to die on? Probably not. This is a kid that has a crazy haircut most of the time. But that's okay. Yeah, so parenting with the end in mind. You know, there's a scene in this movie where Will Smith's having a discussion with the mom actress. And part of the movie is that he gets jumped regularly by these gang members. And so he works late shift, and then he trains the girls all day, and she is just like, this is too much. He's icing his face because he's been jumped and beaten pretty badly. And she's like, this is too much. You know, you're working so much. We're trying to achieve these goals that are unreasonable, and you're kind of risking your life at this point. And he's icing his face, and he's like, what are you talking about? You're talking about this? I already forgot about this. You know, he was so set on his goals that he was, you know, super resilient. And I think that this is so helpful for us, that we can go to bed at night after a terrible day with our child, where we are just in constant conflict with them, and we can feel good about it. That, you know, I'm doing what they need, I'm standing my ground, and my kid's going to grow up and be able to answer, what did your mom value? What did your dad value? All right, and then lastly, create space. So put on your oxygen mask first, know your destination, and create space. A big part of Runkle's book is he talks about how every parent, their end goal should be to develop a self-directed adult. That we want to produce children that can think for themselves, that are able to make principled decisions, and that we do not want to create robots or dogs, right, that know how to follow the rules. And so one way that he describes this is says that often parents think that we are responsible for our children, that is a misconception, that the proper way to think about it is that we are responsible to our children. And so when we think about it in terms of being responsible for our children, he says that we are under the misconception we can control them, and we want to control them. And he says that's not the correct way to think about it, that we should be thinking about the fact that we are responsible to them. We want to influence our children. And so he says a big way to do this is to create space, both figuratively and literally, that, you know, gradually as our kids age, we want to give them more and more freedoms. You know, our definition of children at the beginning was that they want to control everything, right? Just like us. They don't want to be controlled. They hate that. Unfortunately, they need to be controlled in certain ways. But as they age, we want to create more and more space that they have more and more control over their lives. And so here's what he says about this. By voluntarily creating more space for our children, we also reduce their anxious need to separate with drugs, premature sex, gangs, or suicide. Kids do not need more of our anxious reactivity about these choices. They need more emotional space from us to learn to respect their own individuality. And believe it or not, our creation of an anxiety-free space actually makes those bad choices far less likely. Calming ourselves down powerfully communicates two points to our children. Their separation from us is more than okay, it is good. And two, our respect for them is growing, not lessening as they get older, and their choices take on more significance. And so he's, you know, basically what we're gonna gain from this is less power battles between one another. There's not gonna be as many battles between us and our children. Our children are not gonna think, all my mom is doing is trying to control me, that I need to control something. And so he says from a very young age, we should try to do this as much as possible, obviously in an appropriate sense, but he advocates choosing their own clothes as a good way to do this, that you allow them, you know, this is your thing. You wanna look that crazy, then you can, absolutely. He really advocates for freedom in their room, including allowing them to close their door. He says that we should try and make their room as safe as possible so that if they feel like, I'm mad at you, I don't want you to come near me, that they can close their door and be in charge of that. He also advocates that as parents, we should knock on their door. that when we say something is yours, then we mean it, and we're going to allow them to kind of be in control whether we come in or not. He does qualify and say he doesn't believe kids should have devices in their room with a closed door. I think he says until they're like 17 or 18. Another idea is respecting their financial choices. This is something we can be thinking about. What are ways, what are freedoms I can give my kids that I don't need to control? This also is going to take pressure off of us. This is something we don't have to worry about anymore. You know, I've given this over to them. This is their thing. We don't have to fight about how dirty their room is. That's their space. You know, you could do this with pets. This is your pet. You get to be in charge of it, your bearded dragon. The funniest thing and weirdest thing he advocates for is rarely looking them in the eye. Sounds like dog training to me, but yeah, he explains himself by saying, you know, excessive eye contact communicates intensity, and that we should withhold those moments for more intense conversations. I think it's a bit of a counseling trick that, you know, with traumatized people, they do kind of parallel play, and they don't want to do anything that's going to cause kids' defenses to be up. He says that it's going to increase the chance of a child being defensive with us. So I don't know about that. I definitely have a kid that really prefers to look into my soul at all times. So this is not true for them. But yeah, especially boys are known for preferring not to have like real intense talks. But most importantly, I think one big way that we can allow our kids to have space is by allowing them to experience hardship. And again, this is going to prepare them for adulthood. And I think this is most important because, one, this is absolutely the hardest thing to do as a parent, right? There's nothing in us that feels okay about watching our kid hurt, whether it's physically or emotionally. And two, this is something our culture doesn't really allow, right? That it is a lot harder, actually, now for our children to experience hardship. You know, bullying is no longer a thing. It's not something that is allowable anymore. Also with devices. Two good books on this are Free Range Kids by Lenore Skenazy and The Blessing of a Skinny by Wendy Mogul. And I think it's in Lenore Skenazy's book where she kind of cites that a downside to technology today is that our kids are rarely in situations on their own where they need to problem solve, right? So imagine during our childhood, if our parents gave us free range of the neighborhood and we go and ride our bike a couple blocks away, we get a flat tire, we fall down, skin our knee, right? It's terrible. We're crying. We have to figure out how to get back to our house. Some creepy person pulls over and offers us a ride. You know, we have to overcome and problem solve this. Now, our child has a gab watch and they call us and, you know, I'm bleeding. I'm really, really hurt. You got to come get me, right? Or, you know, back in the day, it wouldn't be that crazy if a bus broke down, a school bus broke down on the other side of the city, right? And the kid's stuck on the bus until 7 or 8. And they're like, I was stuck with the creepy bus driver. I didn't eat dinner. I didn't do my homework. It was terrible. But that doesn't happen anymore, right? Because we can locate our kid. And so this is something to think about. You know, we want our kid to experience as much gentle hardship as possible in childhood so that they're ready for adulthood, because adulthood is going to be filled with hardship. So we want to prepare them. And so as parents, a big way we can create space is allowing them to experience these hardships on their own, in a sense. Obviously, we want to talk them through it and be kind of alongside them. But this is another area that we can kind of create space with our kid. And this is going to communicate, I respect you. And it is going to allow our child to grow up respecting themselves and having a major sense of self-confidence that they wouldn't otherwise have. So I think that's a big one to think about. You know, how do I allow them to experience hardship? Am I going in and saving them every time they have trouble at school, you know, or conflict with a mean friend or whatever? So that's our third one, creating space. Put on your oxygen mask first, know your destination, and create space. I think, you know, unfortunately, I don't have a parenting hack for when things are crazy and, you know, we really want to figure out how to keep our cool. You can't do the sign of the cross and hold your breath. And, you know, it's just going to be hard, right? But I do think that as we consider these things and have kind of new perspectives, it gets easier. And we can begin to experience that joy, you know, the joy of this healthy relationship and get to see our kid become more and more independent. I think that that's real rewarding. That's all I had. I can pray for us real quick and then we'll end. Well, God, thank you for children. Thank you for what an extreme blessing they are. And we thank you most of all for your grace that, you know, none of us here do this perfectly. And we're all trying to learn this. But thanks that you love our kids and you want what's best for them. And pray that you'd be giving each one of us something to walk away with here and that we're motivated and not discouraged and excited to see what you're going to do in our families through this. Amen.
Thanks for listening. This has been a Dwell Community Church production.